Today, we're joined by Bob Bradley. Bob has recently written a book called Play Your Leadership Cards Right. And I'm sure we're going to talk about that and along with lots of general business throughout today's show. So let's start by introducing Bob. Welcome, Bob.
Hi, Ben. How are you?
Yeah, so well, Bob. So well. Thank you very much for joining us and the listeners this morning. So for those who don't know you, introduce yourself.
Oh, well, I get introduced personally. I'm an Oxfordshire person, a countryside person, Cotswolds person, a Whitney person. So I've been in business a long time. Well, you can tell from my lack of hair that I've been around a while. But if I work backwards, you can ask me about the history, if you like. What I'm doing now is I'm speaking, writing, coaching, facilitating, you know, the sort of things you do late in the career, all on business. And to save you asking the question, the thing that I'm focused on really is what I call helping accidental leaders of adolescent businesses and helping them with their leadership, their strategy, and the growth. That's my space. Do you want me to go on and tell you about accidental leaders and adolescent businesses? Because that's designed to be provocative.
We're build on that. And I think that's a whole section, isn't it? Later in the show. So let's have a song for the listeners. We'll get the song choice out. And then there's lots to build on there. So as with every guest, you have kindly chosen a song for our listeners. What is your song choice and why have you picked it?
Yeah, interesting. I really struggled with this. I'm not that creative. But the one that jumped in my mind was Bohemian Rhapsody by Queen. And then I couldn't really understand why. And then I realized, and it's not about the words. I don't understand the words any better than anybody else. I think Freddie Mercury took the meaning of the words to his grave. But for me, it's more the music, which for me is a bit of a metaphor for life and business life. Mm-hmm. You know, it goes fast, it goes slow. It sort of goes to plan and then it goes chaotic. It's loud, it's quiet. You hear the team, the whole group working together, and then you have solo bits. So, and then it sort of drifts anyway. The wind blows at the end. So, it just felt, I don't know. I don't know. Can't really explain it, but intuitively, that was the one that jumped into my mind when you asked.
Oxfordshire Station, Get Radio.
Welcome back to the Business Brunch here on Get Radio. Following that very strong song chosen by Bob, we've heard a little bit about Bob's background. And now we're going to be having a discussion all around leadership. So Bob has recently written a book, Play Your Leadership Cards Right, but also some really general business advice over the next hour. So Bob, I want to start with quite a big question. In your intro, you mentioned about adolescent businesses. What is an adolescent business?
It's a term that I came up with to reflect the way that I perceive businesses grow. Mm-hmm. You see, businesses start up one person. They get have an idea, have a vision, have a something they want to do in the world, what do for the world to earn a living, and then they grow a bit. And my experience is the first bit is never easy. It's a very driven entrepreneurial business. There's a lot of talk about what happens, what entrepreneurs are at that stage. Mm. I work with many businesses like that. I've also worked for big corporates, the machine, if you like. And the metaphor is because I realize that in between the two, there's a whole phase of growth, of growing, which is pretty painful, pretty disruptive. Mm. It's working out. And for me, it was very much like teenage years. Because you're no longer a child, so you can't just go and do it yourself. You've got to get other people around you working together. But you're not a corporate. You don't have a sort of policies and processes and systems for everything. And it's a really tricky time, I think. Just as teenage years can be very tricky, I think the growing of a business is a very tricky period. And there's lots and lots of things that business leaders need to learn during that phase about how to be an adult without trying to become an adult too quickly as well. It's a real, so just if you're okay, just elaborating on that a little bit. The things that the reason I think it's a challenge is the very things that make a startup successful are the things that hold them back once they get to become a teenager. So what I mean by that is the successful entrepreneurs are generally pretty blinkered. they're pretty driven. I want to do this, and I'm not going to take no as an answer. You know, you think of Alan Sugar. I'm going to put a PC in every home in the country. You must be crazy, mate. You know where you're going to do that. Yeah. But he said, I'm going to do it. And he did it. And he made a lot of money doing it. I'm very successful doing it. Many, many other stories. Bill Gates, PC in on every desk. It's, you know, a bit earlier than Alan Sugar. So the startup entrepreneur is very blinkered and doesn't listen to logic and just does something, just does it. And the business is based on their money, and every penny spent comes from their pocket, and they control everything. And they, and it's like driven by one person shouting to people around them, driving them. Now, that's great, and that's what makes a startup successful. But when you get big, that doesn't work. You can't control 500 people just by sort of one person shouting them all. You have to have a structure. You have to employ managers, blooming heck, you know. Managers, they're overheads. I don't want to waste money on them. What they do, they don't do a job. They're not selling. They're not delivering. They, you know, they're just no. I don't want managers. I don't want the bureaucracy of policies and processes and systems. I don't need strategy. I just do deals. So what I'm trying to get at is that characteristic of the successful entrepreneur, all those sorts of things, is what holds them back. And by contrast to that, some people, and I would put myself in this camp, and I've learned this the hard way, is come from a more professional sort of background, the systematic and structured, and that holds us back because we become too systematic, too structured, too organized, too early. You know, as a small business, you can't afford all those overheads. So I think that teenage years is really troublesome, getting to become structured but not too fast, if that makes sense.
No, absolutely. I think that will resonate looking back at past shows and guests that we've had on. I think that will resonate with so many people, Bob, because I think that it's really common that we set up our business because we love X, we love recruitment, or we love radio or whatever. But actually, we're not necessarily a finance person. We're not necessarily a salesperson. We're not necessarily a marketing person. And actually, sometimes there are better people to wear those hats. But I think one of the traits in the very small business owner is that you wear a lot of hats, whether that be for financial reasons or whether that be because you're so passionate, like we spoke about before. What is that first step from, I guess, going from that small business owner that wears lots of hats to get to, I guess, to get to the adolescent point? Like, what are the, I guess, the things you should be asking yourself to get to adolescent is probably my question for you.
Yeah, I mean, there's loads and loads of different angles that you need to learn about. I would suggest, though, perhaps the most important is getting to understand how to give other people their head, their ability to do things, and not think you're the only person who can do everything all the time. One of the metaphors I used to use when I was running a reasonable sized, medium sized business, sort of 500 odd people, was my goal was to be the second best at everything in the organization. So I was the second best HR director. I was the second best finance director. I was the second best IT director. Because I reckon I need to know enough about each area to sort of know what was right, what was wrong, when I was being bluffed, when I wasn't, all that sort of thing. But I also recognize that I could never be as good as the person who was specialist in that area. So and I had to trust them and believe them and have confidence in them and let them get on with it. I think that's the biggest challenge for a startup entrepreneur, is to let go of doing everything yourself. I think there's a sort of psychological thing goes on, really, that we like to the startup entrepreneur is a bit of a hero getting going. They're used to doing everything, and it feels good to solve people's problems. So when you have one of your team come to you and say, I don't know what to do, boss, it's very tempting to tell them what to do. And the problem is, if you do that, then next time they've got a problem, they come and ask you again. And that's, to me, why many, many leaders of adolescent businesses get stuck, because they become the fountable knowledge, the person who makes every decision. And there's a bit of a collaboration going on, because we the boss feels good about making the decision, and I know that I can solve that problem. But at the same time, subconsciously, I'm not saying it's deliberate, they feel good, because if you make the decision, you can't fire them for getting it wrong because you made the decision. So you're taking the accountability away from them when you make the decision yourself. So the one of the tips I would give anybody listening is try to avoid being passed the burden of the decision. Ask a question. Well, what do you think we should do then, Ben? What do you think we should do, Ben? Okay, well, that sounds good. Why don't you get, what's stopping you? Why don't you do it? Okay, go and do it then. You know, if that's what you think you should do, Ben, I think that's what I'm employing you for. Go and do it. And that way, A, Ben learns not to come to me again with something they know what to do. And secondly, Ben sort of builds and becomes more skilled, more accountable, and more able to go and manage their area. Does that make some sense?
Yeah, very much so. Very much so. I think this would be a good time actually to come on to your book, because I think the title is a very fitting question. In fact, which is play your leadership cards right. How do you play your leadership cards right? And what does that mean?
Okay, so I mean, just firstly, a minor correction: the series is "Play Your Leadership Cards Right." So there's four more books coming that are actually already amazing. Written, but you'll be amazed how long it takes to get these things through the process. Well, I'm sure you wouldn't be surprised. So the series is "Play Your Leadership Cards Right." This book, that just published as the first one, is your first 100 days as a new leader, and it's trying to explain what you do at the various stages, because I've taken over three businesses as a new leader, and I've learned a bit about how to do that. I'm not saying I know everything. You know, I've always got it right. I certainly haven't. What I'm trying to do is help other people learn from my mistakes. But there are things that you sort of, there are patterns as to the sequence of events you need to go through. There are challenges that you need to try and get balanced, like the wrong thing to do. And I've seen it go wrong with other people this way, actually, is to come in on day one and think you know all the answers and just say, do, you know, and have a vision without actually stopping to listen and understand. But at the same time, I've also seen go wrong people who come in and spend far too long procrastinating and discussing and debating and never actually do anything. And as a result, people start to think, oh, well, nothing's changed then, and see you. You have that impact as a new leader. There's a balance to be drawn about how fast you go versus how much you stop and listen, and how much you decide and how much you consult, things like that. There's lots of balances you try and draw around the face. So this first book is about that first 100 days. It's tips and thoughts and step-by-step the way through it. The playing your leadership cards right is the idea that I see what I'm doing is not telling people how to run businesses. You see, I don't think there is one magic formula for business success. I mean, there are these sort of American hype merchants, go and think and you can do it, you know, that sort of thing. I'm very, very skeptical about them. I've seen too many people go away at one of those big conferences, usually there's a sequence, there's a sort of funnel thing that they sell them the £1,000 online thing, then they sell them the £10,000 weekend, then they sell them the £50,000 3-week program sort of thing. They come back from those full of enthusiasm, full of belief, self-belief, and they're really, really buoyant. And then 6 months on, I see them hit a low where actually they haven't achieved it. So I don't think business is about a single magic answer. I think business... There are so maybe in 1,000 years' time we've worked out how every business should be run, but at this stage, I think every business is different. Every decision you make, you know, every business leader is different, and what people need to do is make the right decision for them in their business today, with their customers, their staff, their shareholders, their objectives, their personality, you know, it varies. So what I was getting at there, and the reason for talking about playing your leadership cards right, is the lots of cards you can play, lots of things you can do, and it's about choosing the right ones at the right time. So what I'm trying to do is give you the tips about what the cards are and which ones you can play. So so you can make a choice. I think of it as a toolkit, actually, so that I want people to have, when they're faced with a nail, that they look in their toolkit and say, oh, I've got a hammer. And if they're faced with a screw, they sort of look in the toolkit, oh, there's a screwdriver, I can use that. You know, and if they they can choose the tools that are right for them. So I'm trying to equip people with tools. I'm not trying to tell people how to run their business. I don't think business leaders should listen to people that say, this is how you should do it, mate. That's the quack merchant, the snake oil salesman. Don't believe it. There's not, this is the way you should do it. Here's some things that work that you might choose to use. And here's some things that generally don't work. So be careful about these things. But you then choose the ones that work for you.
No, really, really wise points, really wise points. I'm really keen to build more on that, Bob. Let's have a song and then we'll continue the conversation after this.
Discussing topics that impact local businesses and their owners, this is The Business Brunch. Sponsored by the Oxford Business Community Network, the friendly, no-pressure networking group for Oxfordshire's business people. Sign up to our mailing list at obcn.co.uk.
Welcome back to Get Radio on The Business Brunch. If you are just tuning in, I'm joined by Bob Bradley today, who's kindly agreed to put up with me for an hour to share some real insight with you, the listener, around leadership and around business and around making, I think the point that Bob made before is about making the right choice for you. And I think that's something I'd really like to build on more. I think that one of the things that society teaches us, and I think you gave a really good example of, you buy a course online for £1,000, then you go £10,000 for a weekend, then £50,000. And I think a lot of those courses, not all, but a lot of those courses teach you that you must be the next Bill Gates. You must have the really big business. And I think that one of the things that we found throughout 200 of these shows is actually sometimes society teaches business owners that they must be a certain size or must do it a certain way. And I would be really interested to hear your thoughts in terms of some of the things that us business owners should be asking ourselves in order to set that ambition. Because I think that there's two ways, isn't there? There's the comfort blanket in terms of, I want to stay at the same size, I want to do it my way, the imposter syndrome around it. But there's also the society who teaches us we must be the Bill Gates, and maybe somewhere in the middle is right for some of us. Sometimes the ambition of Bill Gates is right for some of us, but sometimes really small is right. So how do you, I guess, identify your objectives and your ambition, but within your world, if that makes sense?
Yeah, you hit a sort of raw nerve or passion there. I've worked with many, many, I think I count over 300 business leaders in my former business that I work with, running what I would call normal, sensible businesses. That doesn't mean they're not trying to grow and not growing, but they're not the sort of thing you read about in the media and that sadly government keeps funding, which is the do a startup and then become a $1 billion corporation in 5 years. You know, they are businesses that have got grown well and grown steadily for 10, 20, 30 years of a career, maybe 15, 20, 50% per annum at best. You know, they're steady as not, I wouldn't know, and they're not steady. They're never steady. They do this. But they, business is lumpy, but they're growing at normal levels and people are getting, the leaders are learning and going through that journey. And they shouldn't feel bad about only turning over 2 million, only turning over 5 million, 10 million, 50 million. You know, that's a good business. And the economy is made up with lots and lots of those businesses. You know, it's not all about the things that you hear about in the big conferences that you know, the government keeps putting on and promoting, the billion-dollar corporation stuff. That's exceptional, not majority. I can't remember the stats exactly, but something like 95% of businesses in this country employ less than 10 people. And there's nothing wrong with that. Yeah, so I'm very keen on those. As I said earlier, the word I use is adolescent businesses, between maybe 10 to 20 people at the bottom end to 500,000 people at the top end. That's the businesses that I love working for. I'd link to another bit of what my intro mentioned because it links to what you said there. I also call the people I work with very often accidental business leaders. Now, I'll explain what I mean by that, because I always wanted to be a business leader for most of my career. And so I did an MBA, I had a good degree, all that. I was trained to be a business leader. But once I started mixing with other business leaders, I discovered I was the exception that proved the rule. very few BP people running businesses actually set out to do it. A bit like you said yourself, you know, you set out to build a radio station. You know, that's what you're passionate about as a radio station. And I discovered that most business leaders are what I call accidental business leaders. That was never what they set out to do, really. They were passionate about the business content, the radio station. Mm-hmm. They were passionate about books. They were passionate about this piece of engineering. They were passionate about their customers. They were passionate about their staff. They had something that they wanted to do. They didn't want anybody else stopping them from doing it. So they were going to make it happen. That's the classic entrepreneur behavior. But they didn't sit down and think, oh, I need to know about finance. I need to know about HR. I need to know about marketing. I need to know about sales. They didn't learn how to run a business. They were passionate about something and it grew because they were passionate about it and very good at it. So they never set out to be a business leader. They just ended up there. The other route, which is a different form of an accidental business leader, is somebody who was really good at sales. They got promoted to be sales manager. Or somebody was very good at ops and promoted to be ops manager. And then they're really good at that job. So they get promoted to be sales director and then ops director or finance director, whatever. So they work their way up a specialist function. Mm-hmm. And at each promotion, they're doing more and bigger version of what they did before until they go from being sales director to being managing director. Mm-hmm. And that's a very magical, different role. Because as sales director, you're doing what you've always done, which is sales, and just doing more of it and bigger and, you know, building big. There are differences in the roles, you get bigger, but it's still sales. Mm. When you make the switch from sales director to managing director, you suddenly have to pick up responsibilities, things you never touched before. You're now responsible for finance. You're now responsible for marketing. You're now responsible for strategy. You're now responsible for HR. And so that sort of person is also an accidental business leader. And whether they're the entrepreneur that was passionate about a product, a customer, a staff, whatever, and grew a business that way, or whether somebody worked their ladder up and got promoted into the MD role, in both cases, they never set up an MD. And that leaves them feeling, in my experience, when you get close to them, and you have to be close to them because they have to pretend they know all the answers. Mm. When you get close to them, you realize that they're feeling very insecure. Because they're now handling things they've never dealt with before. Mm. And that, you know, somebody's coming to them and asking to give them a guidance in that field. It's not something they've dealt with. So they feel very nervous. And so that's somebody that I found you really, really value discussing in private their challenges. So that's what leads to the sort of things I do, whether that be business coaching, whether that be talking to a group of business leaders like that who are sharing their challenges, or whether it be a full peer group like my former business, MD to MD, where you get a group of business leaders together where in confidential conversations they can talk about these things. And, you know, the biggest single thing that I message that I picked up from people who came to our meetings for the first time was people saying, the guest that had come along and said, whew, if nothing else, it's a relief to know I'm not the only one that's busking it. To know that everybody else is busking it and pretend they know all the answers to their business and to their customers, when actually a lot of it I'm learning on the go.
No, really, really interesting points there, Bob, that I think are going to resonate with a lot of the people listening at home is, I think you have two angles. I think if I'm putting my Thompson and Terry recruitment hat, so for those who don't know, I run a recruitment business, 10 years old, and I think we so regularly see people that example that you gave, who have been really good at sales director, get moved to managing director, and within a very short period leave the organization because actually they haven't either got the skills or haven't had the support. It feels like a lonely place, don't want to step back to sales director because it feels like a failure and leaving the organization. And I think that we see so many great people that have had that great career path leaving that organization because they don't necessarily have those skills or the support to get those skills at that senior head. So I guess that's a really interesting point to build on, if that's okay, Bob, is what would you recommend to organizations who have, or to individuals who have, let's use the sales director as a really great example, started as sales manager, sales director, and the organization, the board, would like this person to be managing director. What are the considerations that this sales director should be asking themselves before saying yes? And what is the support that the organization can give them in order to make that transition to being that true leader or that head of the organization?
Yeah, well, interesting and absolutely on the nail. And I guess from your other business, you know, your day job, it's entirely appropriate. So the two halves of it. So if you look at the individual, first of all, I would say be careful what you wish for. Because I actually had this conversation with a client last week where they've got a great salesperson who's now become the sales director. They're very successful. And they are considering whether they are their successor, you know, when they retire. And they said that, you know, they're pushing for that. The sales director wants the managing director's job. And I said to them, one of the key things you need to do is try and understand why they want the managing director's job. Because the thing is that you think it's the next step from sales director to become the managing director. It's the promotion, the natural promotion. But in my experience, most salespeople love dealing with customers. They love the deal. They hate admin. They hate bureaucracy. They hate people challenges, actually. They you know, and what's the managing director dealing with most of the time? You know, it's the policy, the processes, the direction, the admin that, you know, they've got to deal with all of that stuff. So I said, you really need to spend some time with them, understanding why they want the managing director's job next and to help them understand what that job involves. Because do they really want to spend most of their time in the office or do they prefer to spend their time with customers out and about? Now, I'm not saying managing director shouldn't spend a lot of the time with the customers. They should do. But they cannot avoid the responsibility for making sure the P&L makes sense, making sure that everything is compliant, all that sort of stuff. So I'd say to the person who's looking for that ladder, firstly, make sure it's what you want to do. I'm not saying it's a fantastic job, by the way. I'm not saying managing director is not a great job. I'm just make sure it's right for you. Because I've seen a lot of people do exactly what you just talked about, that they get promoted and then it doesn't work out, and 6 months down the line, they're out without a job. Well, they'd been better off staying where they were. And the business would have been better off too. It's the wrong decision of the business. So let's switch the business side, because firstly, I think the business needs to recognize it's not just a natural promotion. They need to develop the person into the role. They almost need to become a deputy MD first, whether that be an official title or not. And they need to start getting involved in all the other parts of the business. You wouldn't be surprised to know that I would very strongly recommend they join some form of peer group organization, whether that be something like MD to MD, where people meet for a whole day each month and compare notes on their businesses. That, to me, is one of the most powerful ways of learning, because most managing directors don't want to go off to business school. I mean, for some it's right, but most MDs don't want to go off to business school, and they can't spare the time anyway to go away for a week's course or a month's course or whatever, 3 months' course. Actually, that's the most extreme one. I heard that there's a bit of a big company fairly recently who, you know, a new MD gets sent off to Harvard for 3 months. You know, you can't do that in a small business. What I would, is that's why peer groups, one of the reasons peer groups work, because like a day a month to get together and talk to other business leaders. Second reason it works is because business leaders love nothing more than talking about business with other business leaders. So it works really well. And it creates for them a place where they can talk through the challenges without risk, if that makes sense, in confidence, because they always run under confidentiality. So I'd recommend something like joining a peer group. Another form of dealing with that is to have a business coach, a mentor. And if you really are not wanting to invest much, then just join a networking group of some sort, attend the events you run, the business community, you know, the Oxfordshire business community, you know, mix with other people, even if it's in the less confidential format of a group of 50 people listening to a speaker or whatever, then just talking to other people about business helps you develop your thinking. Ideally go off and do a course, but I think that's highly unlikely to be relevant to most normal small businesses. You know, say I'll go back to the beginning. Best thing I can recommend is joining a peer group of some sort. And a peer group, but make sure it's one that's there to learn and not that's there to sell, if that makes sense. There are networking events where it's all about sell. And that should not be the purpose of a networking event. In fact, if you give me a privilege or a moment to sidetrack onto networking, because it's another passion of mine, so many people think networking is about going to an event to sell for people. And that really is why a lot of networking events don't work. Yeah, the networking events that work are ones where you go to build relationships. There's a catchphrase of know, like, trust. There's a sequence of events. Somebody's got to know you. They've got to like you. And then they'll trust you. And only after that can you start to sell. So people, anybody going to a networking event, one of my big mantras is go along with the intention of getting to know people, getting to like people, building the relationship of trust. And that won't happen at the first meeting. It's when you go to the fifth meeting, you see the same person for the fifth time, that then they become a mate and you forget where you met them. It's not no longer a networking. It's, oh, hi, Ben, how are you? And so you've worked through that know, like, trust process. And that's when the business development starts to happen, because Ben meets Fred down the road who says, I need a business leader peer group. And Ben says, oh, well, let me introduce you to Bob. So it's not the people at the meeting that are your customer, potential customers. So don't go and thrust a business card in their face and say, buy some of my widgets. You know, think about how can I get to know, how can I get to like, how can I get to build a trusting relationship with this person. That's what networking events are about, not about selling.
Amazing. No, couldn't agree more. 70% of our clients through my main business, Thompson and Terry Recruitment, have come through networking, and I've never attempted to sell at a single networking event. But actually, those 70% are by nowhere near the biggest value I've had. It's all about, as you say, I've made so many friends that are business leaders and so many connections. And actually, the professional development and that support network will always have so much more value than the cold hard cash. So no, you've made some really good points there, Bob. Let's go to another song and we'll continue the conversation after this.
Get Radio's Business Brunch with Ben Thompson. Sponsored by the Oxford Business Community Network. Our business breakfasts start from just £15. Find out more at obcn.co.uk.
Welcome back to the Business Brunch here on Get Radio. If you are just tuning in, I definitely recommend listening back to the show, which you can pick up on the Get Radio website, whether it be their podcast or video format. But if you are just tuning in, we're talking to Bob Bradley all about leadership, running businesses, growing businesses. We've spoken about networking, and I'm keen just to bring the conversation on a little bit in terms of exiting, because I think it's something that is every business owner will exit at some point, whether it be in a negative way, e.g. the business will need to close, or whether it be selling. And I think that a stat that was given a few shows back, we had a show about exiting your business. And there's a stat that 80% of businesses that go to market are never sold. And of the 20% that are sold, 70% of those business sellers or business leaders who have exited were unhappy with the sales price or regretted it to a degree a year later. So if my math is right, about 7% of businesses that go to market are sold, and the business owner is happy with the sales price. So with that in mind, I think through networking, I find so many people's exit strategy is to sell their business. And I'm not sure what you find, Bob, but should your exit be to sell your business? And should you have a plan B or a plan C? And how? What are the considerations to get your business to the point where somebody would want to buy it? So a really big, broad question there, all connected. But yeah, hopefully it makes sense.
Yeah, now, okay, I'll reinforce the question slightly first and then come on to how to do it, if you like. Reinforce the question with another statistic, but it's not a statistic, it's a story. A friend of mine's a corporate finance person. And I remember him saying to me a few years ago that worst part of his job, he said, was dealing with the widows or widowers. And explained to them how this business that their late partner had built over many years very successfully and was very, you know, generating a good income for the family was not worth anything now because they died in post and they'd not managed to successfully exit. So really tragic way of seeing things. And, you know, hopefully that doesn't happen to us, but it does need to plan for, because you have no choice but to exit one day. We do have to work out what the exit is for us as an individual. Now, yes, I mean, more widely than that, it might be that you're looking at family succession. It might be you're looking at management succession, or it might be you're looking to sell it. So there are different ways of exiting. But we as individual human beings have no choice but to exit this world and exit the business at some stage, by definition. So it is, I think, probably the most difficult challenge for a business leader in their career. Because you see, one of the things there, and this is reinforcing the need for a business coach and mentoring and peer groups, is because you only do it once. Well, I mean, you might do it more than once if you're a serial entrepreneur, but for many people running businesses, it's something they only ever do once. And so they really don't know how to go about it. And there's no magic, no simple magic answer. You'll know from my comments about the toolbox earlier, you know, there isn't a single magic answer to business. However, some things to think about. First thing is the business is only saleable. The value of the business is only, is if you're going to exit, the value of the business cannot be you personally. And if and what that means is the business has got to run without you. So I suggest to people that they need to make themselves redundant. In fact, that's a good career tip. You know, even much lower in the organization, it's tip somebody gave me probably 40 years ago. If you make yourself redundant, you can get promoted. If the business is dependent upon you, you can't. And that applies at the exit stage. You know, you cannot exit the business while the business is dependent upon you. So you have to make yourself redundant. So I suggest the business leader thinks about how do they enable themselves to go away on a 3-month holiday? Yeah. Instead of thinking about exit, think about, I want to go on holiday for 3 months next year. How am I going to do that? And be able to leave the business in safe hands. You know, they've got to become an owner, not a manager, work on the business, not in the business, to quote a overused phrase. You know, you've got to think about how do you do that? And that means the sort of things we talked about earlier, building the competence of the people around you, making sure that the people around you can make decisions without coming to you for everything. Yeah, don't take on the burden. We've talked about it. You know, don't let people pass you the burden of making decisions. Pass the decisions back to them. And that's a very micro thing. So it's about building the team, being able to take a holiday so that people run the business without you. That's the essence. You've got to keep telling yourself in your mind. Now, that might mean that's one of the reasons why we need these policies and processes and structures and systems and things like this. It's why you need a strategy. It is, as I said, it's why I talk about these adolescent businesses, because it's a tough challenge, because the personality of the person that started the business is very often not a great personality for letting go. You know, that the sheer passion and drive they have that makes them successful in startup is what holds them back when they're trying to exit. But you've got to make that transition. You've got to be able to do that. And I'm repeating myself, but you go back, you know, it's the business coaches, business mentors, peer groups, things like that, having people around you that can help you do that. It's a tough challenge. I don't hide from that.
And another interesting thing that's come out of the show over the years is knowing when the right time is exit, because I think you make some really good points in terms of you must be able to make yourself redundant. But at the same time, I think one of the things that we've heard a lot about over past shows is a business that is got to 2 million. It's a relatively small business, but it's running itself. But actually they feel that they could get to 4 or 6 or 7 million. Then COVID could happen and it could become worth 50p. But I guess with all seriousness, at what point do you decide that exit is right? And I appreciate there isn't necessarily a one size fits all, but what are some of the things to consider when making that decision? Okay, I've got to this point. I can go on holiday for 3 months. I'm going to sell. Or actually, I do see potential over the next 3 years. I might get triple the price. Like, how do you determine your exit?
Interesting. I don't think it's a magic formula, because it's very much driven by your own personal circumstances and your personal ambitions. You know, some people want to make a lot of money and retire by 40, others 50, others are happy to carry on running businesses. You know, I have exited and sold the majority stake of my business and now semi-retired, but I'm still involved in it because I'm passionate about business. You know, I can't let go of it. It's my hobby. It's what I find interesting. But one thing I would say that I think many people make a mistake about is thinking it's just about selling the business. It's actually, I think, a minimum of 5 years to exit, because you know, you can't we're talking about, you know, being able to go away and hold it and things like that. We've been talking about building the management team, building the ability for people to do things themselves. That's at least a 5-year project. If you think about it, having a successor as managing director, you need to recruit somebody who's capable of stepping up to managing director. That'll probably take you a year. I mean, I know your industry tries to work fast, but, you know, a recruitment process can take a year by the time you've gone from initial advert, gone through the recruitment process or whatever. Then there's the giving the notice period and, you know, exiting the previous role. And then there's coming and joining. It can take a year to recruit somebody at a senior level. And then it probably takes them a year to get up to speed. And then in year three, they can begin to accelerate. Yeah. And but that's only 2 years. The reason I say 5 years is because you might get it wrong. So you might have to have two attempts. Yeah, the first person might not work out. What I would suggest is you should think of it taking 5 years, and you should be looking to recruit probably two or three people into roles in the business that they don't know it, but in your head, you're thinking, this is somebody that thinks got the talent to succeed me. Which brings me on to a second point, which I think many, many people exiting businesses misunderstand, is it's the just hard facts reality. I'm holding the mirror up saying it actually costs money. If you're going to recruit a managing director, somebody who's caliber of managing director, they don't come cheap. So probably, you know, and most people running a business are very tight-fisted, I suppose, being nice about it, you know, and understandably and quite correctly so. But if you don't invest in recruiting somebody who's good enough to succeed you as managing director, then you're never going to be able to exit. And actually, that's a false economy, because that's why you won't sell for a capital gain sum at the end, because you've never recruited somebody who's good enough to succeed you. So I think what one of the hard facts that people need to own and managers need to face up to is they need to recognize they are probably going to reduce their profitability for that 5 year period by recruiting people who are overqualified for the job they're recruiting into, in the hope they're going to develop into managing directors. You know, they're probably investing time in developing these people. They're probably investing money in developing these people. You know, it's costing the business money during those 5 years to get to the point where you can then exit the business for a PE multiple that means it's worthwhile having done that. You know, I'm not saying recruit somebody solely to become the successor as MD, but you're recruiting somebody into sales director that's got more about them than just being sales director, or recruiting somebody into ops director who's got more about them just being ops director. You need to over recruit if you like.
No, absolutely. Couldn't agree more. I can't believe it, but we are very, very almost at the end of the show. Time has flown, and thank you so much, Bob. But one of the things we do like to do, and we've got about 30 seconds left, so no pressure, is just to end with a top tip, whether it be something I've not asked you as of yet, or whether it be you just recommend our listeners highlight something in their notepad. Under the umbrella of playing your leadership cards right, what would be your takeaway top tip?
Okay, it's very clear, and it's wider than just the MD. It's to think very clearly about, what is my business for? Why is my business here? And I say business, I mean, I think the distinction between charities, business, and public sector are overstated. I think every organization that people are leading is there to solve a problem in the world. What is that problem? How can we be absolutely brilliant at solving that problem so that people are delighted to give us money to do so? Whether that person be a customer who pays for the product, or whether that person being an investor who's backing the company, whether that person is a government that's prepared to pay a public sector organization to do things on behalf of the taxpayer, or whether that person be somebody who donates to a charity or gives a grant to a charity to do something useful in the world. Organizations that are successful, in my experience, are very clear about how they solve a problem in the world and solve it so brilliantly, people are delighted to pay them to do it.
Amazing. Well, what a way to end the show. But thank you so much for joining me on the Business Brunch on Get Radio today, Bob. It's been a real pleasure. And for those who don't know you, I'd really recommend that they head over to your LinkedIn, head over to your website, and indeed buy your book. So thank you for that.
One tip on buying my book on Amazon: just look up, search Bob Bradley on Amazon, you'll find my book. Unfortunately, the title, Play Your Cards Right, was a mistake in an Amazon sense, and it doesn't take you to the book quite so well.
Amazing. No, thank you so much for that.